Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. More twists and turns in the U.S.-China tariff war leads to a mixed close on Wall Street for the major indexes. The Dow added 54 points, the S&P 500 losing about a half a point, the NASDAQ down 62. He's optimistic about his prognosis, says former President Joe Biden. He'll be taking a pill to treat his prostate cancer after a Memorial Day speech today in Newcastle, Delaware.
I feel good.
Have you decided on your treatment options?
Yeah, we have. We're underway, and all the folks are very optimistic.
Hundreds of thousands of migrants in the U.S. could be forced out soon. The Supreme Court today ruled that the government can move forward with its plans to end parole protections for many who fled Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, Venezuela. Loretta Swit has died. She played Major Margaret Houlihan, head of nurses on the hugely popular war-themed TV comedy series MASH. She was 87. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. State Republicans are proposing an increase in state payments to individual municipalities to cover the expenses of providing services like fire, law enforcement, and sanitation to state buildings. Governor Tony Evers included a $17 million increase for the Municipal Service Payments Program in his proposed biennial state budget, but Republican lawmakers are proposing a $31 million increase. They say that individual municipalities should not be on the hook to provide services to the state without proper financial reimbursement. Following the annual spring hearings hosted by the Wisconsin Conservation Congress and Department of Natural Resources, officials say there is a great deal of support for starting the trout fishing season earlier. Over 9,000 residents provided input on 43 proposed changes to fish and wildlife management in the state during the spring hearings. Among the potential changes was a proposal to move the start of trout season from early May to the first Saturday in April. The goal would be to give anglers more opportunities to get out on the water. Shell Lake School District Superintendent Todd Fellhofer recently provided another update on the district's financial situation after failing to pass a referendum in the November and April elections. The district proposed a four-year non-recurring operational referendum in both elections, which failed each time. Officials have been working with State Senator Romaine Quinn to seek additional funding as it faces a budget deficit that could result in significant cuts. District officials also say a federal mental health grant is set to expire earlier than anticipated. A U.S. Geological Survey field office in Rice Lake is set to close next year as a result of cuts made by the Department of Government Efficiency. The office is operated by the agency's Upper Midwest Water Science Center, which operates thousands of stream gauges to gather water quality data. USGS staff says closing the office could make it more difficult to collect quality data in the state, in turn making it more difficult for government agencies to make water-related policy decisions. The Rice Lake office is also responsible for repairing many of the stream gauges. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Badgers Hall of Fame. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The University of Wisconsin announcing 12 new inductees into the Badgers Athletic Hall of Fame, including NFL running back James White, announcer Matt LaPay, and basketball player Frank Kaminsky, who led the Badgers to back-to-back appearances in the Final Four.
You know, my 4 years here, I just really wanted to maximize my opportunity. You know, I felt really lucky to be able to have a scholarship to come here in the first place because I wasn't highly recruited. I mean, it's just like you get overcome with this, like, emotion that you can't really describe. Like, I love here. I love Wisconsin. I love the school. I love being back on campus.
NFL Packers OTA practices continue in Green Bay. The team adding another receiver to the roster, Sam Brown Jr. from the Miami Hurricanes. Baseball, Brewers open a three-game series on the road tonight against the Phillies after a much-needed day off yesterday. Trevor McGill.
Workload's been a lot, and it's just kind of what we needed to do to keep the wins going. So, yeah, it's out there for the boys.
That's Brewers pitcher Trevor McGill with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Areas of wildfire smoke drifting in today from a northwest breeze gusting around 25 miles per hour, prompting an air quality alert. Otherwise, it's partly sunny today with high temperatures scraping about 80. Patchy smoke may still linger tomorrow and it'll still be warm. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 74.
Matt Nair on air.
The Joint Finance Committee just had four meetings around the state of Wisconsin. The top three things of concern to people were education, health care, and child care. The Republicans stripped all of those things out of Governor Evers' budget. So I'm thinking about going next time just to make sure that they all put their phones down when I'm talking to them, because I have a feeling they're all playing Candy Crush because they're not paying attention to what people are saying.
Catch Matt Nair on air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
We are not perfect here at Civic Media. Far be it. Certainly not perfect at this show. But one thing I can assure you of, our owner that I can see right through this glass right now, Sage Weil, has never once told me what to say and encourages us to speak the truth. And that's why, above all else, I'm proud to work for this company. And along with my colleagues, we will bring you what's really happening out there. And if we get it wrong along the way, we'll admit to that and correct ourselves as well.
Catch The Todd Allbaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, it's film incentive advocate Rex Sykes, Civic Media sports director Jimmy Cuska, and even though we are Terry Barless, it's still Bar Band Friday night. We'll be joined by Rocker. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt Nair on air.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people. This is the Maggie Dawn Show.
It is this moment right now, and we need people that have wealth and access to step the hell up.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
We can't take this as a country to have a leader who is so ill-informed and we look terrible.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
You got a bad sandwich at your favorite deli. What do you do about it? We can talk about whatever you want to sound off on.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. It is Friday. We've made it. Another week in the Donald Trump 2.0 administration is in the books, and not without some pretty extraordinary fireworks this week. I'm just going to say this much. I've got a great co-host for the first approximate hour of the afternoon. You know him well. He is the host of Amicus, a law review on Saturdays on this fine network from 9 to 11. His name is James Santel, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. Welcome back, James.
Maggie, good to be with you once again. As you said, quite a week, right? Exclamation points following that statement.
Quite a week. Here's what I'm doing now, Jim. I'm going to have like a Trump countdown to 200. 200 what? Not 200 days. No. 200 losses in court.
Mess.
He is approaching that number. By my last count, there's around like 180 odd court cases going through mostly federal courts for various reasons, but because it's the federal government primarily. And he's been losing most of them. So like the ticker is now going. So lots of activity this week, Jim. I wanted to just jump right in on the big one of today. Big news today. The Supreme Court, just within the last couple of hours, stepping in and has cleared the way, at least for now. For now, again, this is the emergency relief channel that you can use to get to the Supreme Court, aka the shadow docket, has cleared the way for Donald Trump to revoke what a lot of people call basically immigration parole for over a half a million people that are in this country. It was an extension of legal status put into place under the Biden administration. Donald Trump revoked it. It was challenged. It was stayed initially. The appeals court put it back. Then that was appealed. And now the Supreme Court is saying this would be the largest group of individuals ever basically in the history of the United States to have their legal status here one day and gone the next without any what everyone in the back of the class.
Right. We know what those words are, right? Without something called due process and basic rights that are afforded everyone in this nation, whether you're a citizen or not. Maggie, you and I were chatting just a few days ago about another Supreme Court case. And at that time, you appropriately said, we've got about 350,000 Venezuelans who are now being affected by what the Supreme Court did. And today, here's your next category, perhaps, Maggie, my friend. How many things can we do that will affect immigrants and migrants in this nation? 500,000 people now exposed. Again, on this shadow docket, we're not getting a statement from the Supreme Court about exactly why they're doing that. We've got some dissenting language. And once again, we've got a situation where, again, the underlying litigation continues. You and I have talked about this in the past. But the Supreme Court says, while that's going on, before we get to the merits of this, in the meantime, go ahead and begin to deport these people. 500,000 people in this nation as of a few hours ago.
Here, this is according to the Washington Post. The decision is the second time this month, as Jim has rightly pointed out, that the high court has given Trump officials permission to terminate the program that protects immigrants fleeing countries racked by war, economic turmoil, while litigation on those programs, in other words, the validity of those programs, continues. The justices also allowed the administration to revoke temporary protective status from a different group of nearly 350,000 Venezuelans. That means in total, legal one day, you wake up the next and you're not, and masked people that don't have to identify themselves may be banging down your door in the middle of the night to disappear you. We're talking about a total of 880,000 people, nearly 1 million people in this country, for whom there is apparently no legal recourse. Literally, they can be disappeared in the middle of the night.
They are out there.
Am I understanding this correctly,
I think
Jim?
You are, and I don't think, I know that you're identifying that exactly correctly, Maggie. And again, it doesn't help a lot, but we've got Ketanji Brown Jackson, who is the voice out there saying, what are we doing? Probably channeling some of your rage and my rage and my utter disappointment in what our Supreme Court is doing these days. And she is talking again about the merits of this case down the road. She says, you know, even if down the road, the petitioners here are not successful, this is not the way we litigate in America. And she's absolutely right about that. Let's, again, this shadow docket, once again, this emergency docket, where now we're doing everything, right? We begin the litigation. We put together one of those 180 injunctions that's now a part of your routine math on all of this, Maggie. And then what we do is we run to the Supreme Court and say, while this is all pending, stop all this or permit us to go back and put all this in place again. That's how litigation now at the highest levels of importance is being conducted today. And as you said, just under 1 million people now, it was a few days ago, now can be subject to removal, even while the underlying case, once again, is still not decided on the merits. It should be shocking for everyone.
And here's the thing, the emergency docket, and I guess there's two observations that I want to make about this. The first is Donald Trump will laud courts when he wins, and he will call for judges' impeachment by name when he loses. That's hogwash, right? Like, this is the role of the courts to take each case up. And assess it, to have these emergency interventions as individual judges or justices deem appropriate in their good faith objective interpretation of the law. That's our system. What I find really disturbing, Jim, about the Supreme Court's, what I'm just going to call, it is an objective fact when you analyze its use of the emergency docket and when the Supreme Court elects to intervene through this emergency shadow docket, there is no discernible, consistent set of principles that you can look to understand or explain the court's interventions. You simply can't. And it's not on the merits, because the Supreme Court over the last 15 years has done things that favored a party on its emergency docket and on the merits decided in favor of the other party. So that isn't even has not a sufficient amount of explanatory power, to put it in sort of economist terms. And the thing that I want people to understand about the shadow or emergency docket is that its use dates back to a time when it was nearly exclusively used in death penalty cases.
Yes.
And specifically, the posture was if the Supreme Court could see that there were serious questions about actual innocence or serious process flaws.
Something that went to the trial, the merits of it, the process that, and you say, you know, again,
if the person was actually guilty, Absolutely. The process was so flawed that it would, frankly, erode public trust in criminal prosecutions writ large. This is when the court would say, listen, we're going to keep the status quo, meaning we're going to keep this person alive,
right?
And not permit the state to change the facts by killing this person so that we can ensure that the integrity of largely our criminal justice system is preserved so that we preserve public trust. This was the positioning of these cases without getting into the what is habeas and how does it work. Here's the point, the second point that I'm trying to make here, Jim, and I just want to get your reaction there too. And that is, not only is the court's decisions about what cases to accept and hear through its shadow emergency docket indecipherable, there's no discernible principle.
No consistency.
Its intervention and the outcomes, meaning whether it intervenes, whether it stops actions, are also not susceptible to any cogent, consistently applied set of principles, meaning if you simply take the principle of preserving the status quo and not permitting the government before a case is fully litigated to materially impact businesses or other people's lives, this is a case that shows you how deeply flawed this Supreme Court's view and embrace and use of the shadow docket is. These are people that could be disappeared overnight. It is nearly a million people. They were legal one day, not legal the next. Again, if you go back to that fundamental, like, hey, how did this used to be? What were the, how did the court use its powers historically? This is such a departure from that, ripping away protections, freedoms, etc., with no recourse for the people affected. It's such a departure, is it not?
It is absolutely that kind of departure. And your listeners, again, I'll use the word once again, should be outraged by this. Again, we go to the merits of this, of the process, the demerits of the process here, as Ketanji Brown Jackson and others have said. And you don't see that consistency. One of the other things that I think is at the core of what you're saying, Maggie, is just this. Here's what you also lose. By doing this way, what are you losing? You're losing the opportunity to hear on briefs. Yes, that's right. Lawyers like us, we love to write things, right? You're not submitting the extensive briefs. You're not having those oral arguments in front of the court where Ketanji Brown Jackson and Neil Gorsuch and all the others can spar and go back and forth and talk about the underlying merits, peek under the rug, if you will, as they talk about it. You're losing all of that process. And along the way, you lose, therefore, the humanity, candidate in a case like this. Supreme Court justices often look and say, these are real people, are they not? How can we deal with this in the best way to preserve their rights, their interests? You lose that opportunity. And the other thing American population loses, again, at number one, the top of this is 500,000 people. But secondarily, a sense of access to and transparency when it comes to government. Why is my, as you just said, why is my Supreme Court doing this? We don't know. And the consistency is simply not apparent. That is not good government, regardless of what branch you're a part of. All of that process is missing here.
As Justice Jackson wrote in her dissent today, the court botched this assessment. It undervalues the devastating consequences of allowing the government to precipitously upend the lives and livelihoods of nearly 500,000 non-citizens while their legal claims are pending. She went on to warn that, quote, social and economic chaos will ensue if that many non-citizen parolees are suddenly and summarily remanded to their home countries. These people have integrated into American neighborhoods and communities in the hopes of eventually securing long-term legal status. And effectively, their rights to have those cases heard in full on their merits have now been obliterated by a Supreme Court without consistent principle nor consistent application. It's not supposed to be this way. Your two legal eagles are here to help you through all the morass, all of the news. I got Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dwan, former court counsel from Milwaukee County, former federal court clerk for Judge Michael Caney in the Seventh Circuit. And this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. New York City Mayor Eric Adams had his bribery and corruption charges dropped by the U.S. Department of Justice under questionable circumstances in April. Because of those charges, the New York City Campaign Finance Board denied Adams matching campaign funds. Adams is now suing to get those funds. Mayor Adams was accused last December by the Biden DOJ with taking campaign donations from foreign nationals and businessmen, allegedly using straw donors to make them appear as legitimate donations. He was also accused of doing favors in exchange for luxury travel and attempting to conceal those transactions. We reported in February that the DOJ dropped bribery and corruption charges against Adams after Adams visited Trump at Mar-a-Lago. An apparent Trump directive to drop the charges to the DOJ's Southern District of New York resulted in the resignations of seven experienced prosecutors. As a result of the corruption charges and paperwork omissions, the New York Campaign Finance Board denied Adams $4 million in matching funds for his campaign from the state's taxpayer-funded campaign finance option. Now that the charges have been dropped, Politico reports that Adams is now suing the board to recover $3.4 million of those denied funds. The Campaign Finance Board will reportedly revisit Adams' eligibility for funding in July. Find our past reports on Adams at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Mommy, how come I can't sit in the front seat?
Because I love you and you're just not ready yet.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Gone. At least we all hope so. No more billionaire overlords, or just maybe billionaire overlords that pull the strings of politicians from afar? Question mark. But Doge is still around. Who knows what all of it means? Maybe it's because Stephen Miller is ticked off that Elon Musk is apparently poaching Stephen Miller's wife from the White House to come work with him at SpaceX. It is a mess, but all part of the mess that James Santel, your co-host with me today, Maggie Dawn, here on the Civic Media Radio Network, are trying to unpack for you. Lots of news this week. On a more local basis, we had the Joint Finance Committee met yesterday. They approved updates in the biennial budget process to the state employees' pension system, talked about certain DSPS contract workers. There's a whole lot going on in that sphere, and we are so lucky here on the Maggie Dawn Show to have the ranking Democratic member of the Joint Finance Committee joining me on Monday to talk about the biennial budget process. Senator LaTanya Johnson, you're not going to want to miss that again. That's on Monday. Mark your calendars and join us for that excellent discussion. Meanwhile, also in the state legislature, the LGBTQ plus caucus has unveiled its equality agenda just in time for Pride Month. We will be covering that. The package includes 4 bills and 2 joint resolutions aimed at increasing equity and removing discriminatory language from Wisconsin law. And I just want to put this thought out there for everyone. Wherever you may sit in the culture wars, whatever your personal beliefs are, I think we can agree on one thing. We can save the arguments for the book bans for another day. But when it comes to equal treatment under the law, that is something that I think all of us can get behind. I certainly hope that we can do so on the show when we pick that discussion up in upcoming Pride Month. And, of course, locally, Judge Hannah Dugan filed her brief yesterday supporting her motion to dismiss her entire criminal indictment. Jim, I just wanted to spend 1 second talking about Judge Dugan's filing because there were some juicy bits. I haven't quite parsed through the entire brief yet. It's pretty lengthy. I'll be doing that over the weekend. That's my fun weekend reading.
Yes, right. That is also briefs. What lawyers do, right?
This is our free time.
Who needs Netflix, right? We've got briefs to look through, right?
We've got briefs to look through. Here's a line from the brief that Judge Dugan filed. This is an extraordinary prosecution that poses a threat to federalism and judicial independence. Dismissal here flows from a straightforward application of long-settled law. The indictment itself is an ugly innovation. Its dismissal will not be. Nothing in the Constitution allows the federal government to superintend the administration and case-by-case daily functioning of state courts as this indictment proposes. Absolutely fascinating. The federal prosecutors will have until June 9th to reply, and then the defendants get a sure reply due by June 16th. So this is moving along at quite a clip. Currently, yes. Trial scheduled for July. I don't personally think that trial date is going to hold, Judge Dugan has said she will avail herself of her right to a speedy trial. Here's another line from the brief. The court should not engage in fact-finding. A bar like immunity blocks the proceedings from the outset. And indeed, they invoke at length, the irony of ironies, Donald Trump's own arguments about absolute immunity. Jim, your reaction to the filing. I thought it was a fine piece of writing,
Piece of writing. And you pick up on that word innovation that you just identified there, Maggie. The lawyers who are putting this in front of eventually Judge Lynn Edelman, again, go first to a magistrate judge, as you and I both know. And that magistrate judge will make a recommendation. Here it'll be interesting to see what that recommendation may be. But ultimately it lands in Judge Edelman's basket, if you will. And this is a judge, as you and I both know, once again, who's not afraid to be, I don't even call it innovative, right? He's one who has seized upon these kinds of concepts, 10th Amendment, judicial immunity. And again, we both know this is also the judge who many years ago found the sentencing guidelines of the federal system unconstitutional. Turns out the Supreme Court said yes, agreed with him. He's not afraid to be out there. And so as this goes forward, again, we're not going to get this right away. It's going to be weeks, as you just said. Don't be surprised if Judge Edelman does play around with at least one of these two. Again, this 10th Amendment issues. We got federalism here, and you got basically the federal government mucking around in the state system. Stay out of it. James Madison stuff. That's the one argument here. And the second, of course, is this irony, of course. All right, Chief Justice John Roberts, if you tell us that a president of the United States of America is immune, admittedly an executive, part of that branch of government, not a judicial member, but still those fundamental concepts that talk about the reasons for a branch of government to be nimble and be able to act well and act in a way that's appropriate to its mission, same kinds of concepts should apply. That's their argument. In any event, I recognize, as do you, that people will say, oh, come on, that's not going to fly. But again, this is the world in which we're living. We're outraged by what happened in July. Those principles, why not, Judge Edelman, take a look at them and see if maybe just so they should be applicable here in this case in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. And that's also the consistent we talked about before. That should also be on Judge Edelman's docket.
What I think is really fascinating about this case is the concepts underlying executive immunity, presidential immunity, which is fundamentally rooted in this idea that that branch, the president, has to be able to act unilaterally and with
strength,
without the fear
and, right,
of being in, right, like, challenged, applies when you think about the concept of absolute judicial immunity. And that's where they're going with this. Stay tuned here. Jim and I will keep you all up to date on that. What is the relationship between pardons, nominations, and terminations in the federal government? Jim and I break it all down for you next. Corruption. That's the hint. Corruption. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is once again seeking landowners willing to host a gun deer hunt for hunters with disabilities this fall. The program has been offered in the state for over 30 years, and this year's hunt will take place from October 4th to October 12th. Applications to host a hunt through the program can be found on the Department of Natural Resources website and must be submitted by July 1st. To be eligible, interested landowners must have at least 60 acres available and be able to host at least 3 hunters. Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson hinted that he may not run for another term when his current term ends in 2028. In an interview with The Hill on Tuesday, Senator Johnson referred to himself as just a guy from Oshkosh trying to save this country. Senator Johnson narrowly retained his seat in the 2022 election, edging out Mandela Barnes. President Donald Trump is the only Republican to win on a statewide ballot since then. Senator Johnson is currently pushing back against the budget bill passed in the House, saying it doesn't reduce spending enough. Two Western Wisconsin Oak Leaf clinics are planning to relocate over the next couple of weeks. According to organization officials, a Rice Lake clinic will remain in the area but move to a new facility on Wisconsin Avenue on Monday. The clinic currently located in Cornell will move to a facility in Chippewa Falls on June 9th. Oak Leaf Clinic's officials also say they plan to begin offering urgent care services at the new Rice Lake location beginning on August 4th, which will be open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday and 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. on weekends and holidays. The Washburn County Board is looking for solutions as the Department of Corrections says the jail in Shell Lake is not up to full compliance standards. The issue was raised a couple of years ago, forcing Washburn County to send some inmates to jails in other counties. The DOC says the Shell Lake facility either needs to be remodeled, a new facility needs to be built, or inmates need to keep being taken to other county jails. Those inmates have previously been taken to Burnett, Polk, and Barron counties, which say they are no longer able to continue housing them. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Speaking of privileged cluelessness, actress Jenna Ortega says she was unhappy after her role in Wednesday catapulted her to fame. The rich 22-year-old actress told Harper's Bazaar becoming famous was intense and scary. She also said she was unhappy playing a schoolgirl in the show when she was becoming a young woman in real life, which she feared would not allow people to take her seriously. Such a big fat bummer. I'm sure Starbucks is hiring. Actress Felicity Huffman went on Good Morning America to talk about her new and most likely terrible Lifetime film. While being interviewed, she reacted to the news that Kerry Washington is part of a new Desperate Housewives reboot. She said it was great that they are redoing Wisteria Lane for women of color. This is the same woman who cheated to get her own privileged but not so bright daughter into college, most likely taking a spot away from someone who needed it more or a person of color. It is good that she at least seems okay with TV people of color getting ahead. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy and hazy tonight with a low in the mid-50s and filtered sunshine for tomorrow, a high around 80. Mostly sunny and up to the mid-80s on Sunday. Close to 90 on Monday, breezy, storms Monday night and Tuesday. Currently at 75 degrees.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
This is for people who watched me anchoring the news at Channel 13. My last day at TV 13 was 20 years ago yesterday.
Oh, I'm old now too.
Well, yeah, that was my whole point.
And I was too when you stopped working at TV.
That's what I get all the time now is people come up and they go, oh, were you on TV? I'm like, yeah. And then I go, don't say it. I watched you when I was a little kid. And I'm like, yikes.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Matt and Air on Air.
Congressman Mark Pocan is here. Are you planning on going out on the road again, having a couple more town halls?
Yes. No, Claire, Derek and I have been invited by Opportunity Wisconsin, so I'm really looking forward to debating Derek. My guess is it's more likely I will sprout a head full of hair than he will show up. This is important to let people know what's in this bill, because there is a very good reason why Republicans are hiding from town halls.
Catch Matt and Air on Air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome back comedian-singer Rob Paravonian, and Milwaukee-based actor Rob Martin and I talk about our favorite movie gangsters. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
One love, especially on Fridays when it is a free ticket Friday. This is where we give away tickets to the Brewers games in Civic Media's lovely club seats. We're going to do that today, of course, in order to qualify to win in the statewide free ticket Friday text to win contest. You're going to need the Civic Media app, which you can get for free wherever you get your apps from. When I drop the secret word to win sometime during today's show, you're going to text that word via the app. That's going to qualify you to win. You'll get a bounce back text message confirming that you've been entered. We select the winners on Mondays. You will get contacted by Civic Media, and we transfer the tickets via the MLB ticket app. It's called the Ballpark app, so you got to have that. I will be dropping the word before the end of the show. You're going to have to stay tuned. I'm not exactly sure when I'm going to do this. And the tickets that we're giving away today, there are four of them. It is for a Saturday evening game. Wondering what to do that first big weekend in June? Well, we'll have you covered. That is when the Brewers tee off against the San Diego Padres right here at AmFam Field, Saturday, June 7th at 6:35 p.m. Again, that's Saturday, June 7th at 6:35 p.m. Full rules of the free ticket Friday text to win contest can be found on Civic Media's website. Stay tuned. I'm going to drop that word before we're done for the day. And if things could not get any better for all of us, it is about to be the Scotty Summer Text to Win giveaway. We've got trips, tickets, prizes, all kinds of cool stuff. Again, you're going to need the Civic Media app for that. That kicks off on Monday. So starting on Monday, every single day of the week, there's going to be some fun stuff for you to win from Civic Media, hoping to make your summer a little sweeter every day on Civic Media and right here on this program. I've got James Santel, my fine guest co-host, on Fridays and sometimes Tuesdays as well. He is the former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, a fine legal eagle friend of mine and a friend of each one of yours. You want more, Jim? I always do. I catch him every Saturday morning from 9 to 11. He hosts a show right here on the Civic Media radio network called Amicus, a Law Review. Check him out tomorrow. I'm sure he'll be going deeper into some of these issues that we have been covering. Jim, there was quite a bit that happened this week in Donald Trump land, in the MAGA regime, that related to nominations for key positions within Trump's government. And we haven't even uttered the words Jeannie Pirro yet. Mm-hmm. There was a slew of pardons that dropped, and there was a Supreme Court decision early last week that dealt with whom Donald Trump can fire, even if federal law says he can't fire them without cause.
Out of independent agencies created by the Congress, right?
Yes.
And he says, no, I've got the ability, the capacity. I'm going to fire them even though it's not for cause, but I can do it just because I've got this powerful position that the people of the United States of America put me in, and the Supreme Court has said I can do it. So that combination, that trifecta, it is a problem, right?
So I briefly talked about the Supreme Court decision. Again, this was an application for a stay. Mm-hmm. So again, the emergency and shadow docket. This particular case dealt with firing people from the National Labor Relations Board and a related labor oversight board called the Merit Systems Protection Board. Again, these are independent boards or commissions established by Congress legislatively. And again, the key word here is independent. The president, when there are vacancies as defined within the enabling legislation, when there are vacancies, the president does get to appoint to them. But presidents aren't supposed to be able to remove people from these congressionally created independent agencies unless they're being terminated for cause. Donald Trump intentionally fired a bunch of people and said, I'm not doing this for cause. I'm doing this because I think I should have the power to just fire people off these so-called, we thought they were independent, but maybe not so much. The Supreme Court, again, on its emergency shadow docket, said, go ahead and fire these people. That's just fine. It was a pretty interesting decision. I just wanted to read a little bit, and then we're going to stitch all this together, Jim and I will, for each and every one of you fine listeners, because whether you're looking at who he's nominating into these key and specifically most recently U.S. attorney positions as well as judicial nominations, you look at who he's pardoning, and now we think about these so-called, supposed to be legislatively created by Congress, independent boards and commissions that he now, according to the Supreme Court, can just fire anybody for no reason or any reason he sees fit to. What are we looking at here? And you have to really pull all those things together and look at them as a whole, not as individual widgets. But here's the interesting language from this interim decision from the Supreme Court. He may remove without cause executive officers who exercise presidential power on his behalf, subject to narrow exceptions recognized by our presidents. They're not applicable here. The stay in this case, in other words, our decision to let Donald Trump fire these people, reflects our judgment that the government is likely to show that both of these so-called independent boards exercise considerable executive power. But we don't ultimately decide in this posture whether the NLRB or this other board falls within such a recognized exception. The stay also reflects our judgment that the government faces greater risk of harm from an order allowing a removed officer to continue exercising the executive power than a wrongfully removed officer from being unable to perform her statutory duty. We're going to get to the Fed in a second, Jim. But that sentence from the Supreme Court in this order. So there, okay, you've talked about the risk of harm to the removed officer. You've talked about the risk of harm to the executive branch, which Congress had made a judgment should be limited to for cause removals. Like that was the first branch, the Article I congressional branch of government's decision. The court's saying, no, we're going to wipe that away. Dear Supreme Court, where in the hell is the interest of the public to have independent boards and commissions remain as apolitical, objective, free from corruption, and independent as Congress intended? That it's not mentioned anywhere in this interim order.
Absolutely.
The interest of the public.
Right, you look at the legislative history, both on NLRB, as you said, and the MSPB, and it was exactly that. The Congress said, you know what, we can't have these important labor decisions, these important personnel decisions be made by the whims of somebody in the White House, regardless of whether Democrats or Republicans. We don't want that to happen. It's in the law. Right. And so now we've got a Supreme Court that says, OK, because it's kind of mushy, it's kind of executive like, we're going to permit this to be underneath the president. Again, this is, as you and I both know, once again, this is the larger unitary executive theory. Right. Where we do everything. And here's the other point that you're making, Maggie, which is just this. Harm to the people of the United States of America? You bet. Because in the meantime, when these two are not permitted to come back into their service with the NLRB and the MSPB, what happens? The quorums that are required for them to make decisions are not there.
There.
They can't act. These agencies cannot act. And that, too, I suspect, is a part of your larger theory about this, is which is to bring them down, right? You get rid of these people and you bring the very operation of government to its knees.
And I've made these arguments before. You can actually see like the con that is afoot, right? It's not about efficiency questions. It's about actually destroying the government department from within. It's not about making sure that executive power is being fulfilled and not hampered in an unconstitutional way. No, it's actually about Donald Trump ensuring that he can engage in pay-to-play and loyalty testing to appoint people that may or may not be acting in the best interest of the American public, because now Donald Trump can just fire him at will. Oh, you're not doing what I want? Boom, you're gone. Which opens up this Pandora's box, not just for a lack of accountability to the American people, because this stuff is so in the weeds, Jim. It's so deep.
It is. 99%
of people have no idea what the hell the NLRB is.
Right.
Lawyers.
The MSPB, like, right?
Yeah, or the, correct. But what it opens up is this very real possibility for pay to play. When I say pay to play, it means if I give money or other favors to an elected official or a candidate, they will then exercise their powers in a way that benefits me, you know, by like appointing loyalists to a so-called congressionally created, quote, independent board or commission like the NLRB, which is supposed to help businesses and labor organizations resolve disputes and decide what this very complicated area of law that is called labor law is. That is corruption. That is the swamp, right? Like, this is the thing that all of us hate in government, regardless of party. And then when you look at, oh, well, we should give this administration and this president the presumption of regularity and good faith, because that's what we do with presidents. Not this guy.
Right.
Just look at who he just pardoned this week. These weren't people who went through the regular pardon process, which you understand well. These were donors and very vocal supporters with big platforms. This wasn't someone or individuals that expressed contrition, changed their lives. I shouldn't speak in absolutes as to all of them, but the vast majority of them, these were people who advocated for Donald Trump as a candidate, donated to him. That's who's getting these pardons. They're not going through a vetting process.
They're not.
He's just like, yeah, I'll. That's corruption. That's the swamp. Democrat or Republican president, that's bad. You look at who he's nominating, whether it's to federal circuit courts. These are appeals courts or appeals courts.
A guy named Emil Bové comes to mind, right? Right. To the Third Circuit. Right. Right. Exactly. And again, on the pardon piece, again, you and I both know that a little bit of civics here as well. There's a thing called the pardon attorney. The office of the pardon attorney is inside the Department of Justice. And what do you do if you want a pardon? You submit your application there. You describe how you are, in fact, contrite. You're sorry that you've done this thing. And there's something about your life that now warrants the records basically to be not completely wiped out historically, but removed the burden of that prior criminal prosecution and the conviction that you have suffered. That's the way it's supposed to be done when you're no longer going through the basic process. There again, you're doing exactly the kinds of things that you're doing inside these agencies. You're saying, you know what, we're not going to do that process. We're not going to have a quorum, and therefore we're just going to do whatever we want. If you pay $1 million to have dinner with me, we will ensure that a member of your family does, in fact, get the pardon that they're looking for. That's the corruption you're speaking about.
And again, we're seeing this time and time and time again from a man who said to voters, said to his base, I will drain the swamp. This is the swamp. This is making government less responsive, less transparent, less accountable, whether you're talking pardons, nominations, or how he's dealing with those individuals that are serving on congressionally created independent, or at least supposedly independent, boards and commissions. We're going to turn the page, talk about a couple of other things when we come back. Did you know that the chief information officer for DOGE, the so-called Department of Efficiency, was deposed yesterday? I do.
as Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Amory Chevrolet makes the car buying process simple and painless. Whether you're looking to upgrade to something bigger because of your growing family, or you want the adrenaline and want the rush of a two-door sports car for a weekend getaway at the lake, Amory Chevrolet has something for everyone. Stop into their modern showroom today, and any one of their friendly staff will be happy to assist you in your car buying journey. Located along Highway 46 on Amory's south side, Amory Chevrolet is here when you need them.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. New York City Mayor Eric Adams had his bribery and corruption charges dropped by the U.S. Department of Justice under questionable circumstances in April. Because of those charges, the New York City Campaign Finance Board denied Adams matching campaign funds. Adams is now suing to get those funds. Mayor Adams was accused last December by the Biden DOJ with taking campaign donations from foreign nationals and businessmen, allegedly using straw donors to make them appear as legitimate donations. He was also accused of doing favors in exchange for luxury travel and attempting to conceal those transactions. We reported in February that the DOJ dropped bribery and corruption charges against Adams after Adams visited Trump at Mar-a-Lago. An apparent Trump directive to drop the charges to the DOJ's Southern District of New York resulted in the resignations of seven experienced prosecutors. As a result of the corruption charges and paperwork omissions, the New York Campaign Finance Board denied Adams $4 million in matching funds for his campaign from the state's taxpayer-funded campaign finance option. Now that the charges have been dropped, Politico reports that Adams is now suing the board to recover $3.4 million of those denied funds. The Campaign Finance Board will reportedly revisit Adams' eligibility for funding in July. Find our past reports on Adams at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Welcome back, everybody. I want to give some shout-outs to our great listeners on the text line engaging this afternoon. Of course, Cam from Appleton. Hello, my friend. Linda from Milwaukee. She loves the Legal Eagles on the Maggie and Hahn Show. We've got Dave Brumman listening on WMDX from Oregon, Wisconsin. Mark from Prairie du Sac. Tiffany from River Falls. Hello, everybody. Welcome. Happy Friday. And Dale from Wausau is on the phone lines. Dale, we're going to get to your call in just a moment. My name is Maggie and Hahn. You're listening to the Maggie and Hahn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got James Santel with me this afternoon. Thanks for being here, James. It's a real pleasure. I mentioned this. So there is the one of the nearly 200 cases that Donald Trump is losing nearly everywhere, with some exceptions. We've talked about a couple of them.
There are a few.
In the federal,
just a few.
Just a couple. One of those cases is a case that is proceeding, I believe it's the Eastern District of New York, not the Southern District of New York, in federal court, challenging DOJ's accessing of private information of all of us. social security numbers, where you live, how much you pay in taxes, the whole kit and caboodle. One could argue maybe one of the reasons Elon's totally fine packing up and going home is he's already gotten the cookies out of the cookies jar, so he doesn't need anything else. Rabid speculation on my part. But here's what's really interesting, Jim. Yesterday, it wasn't a deposition. I misspoke before the break. It was not a deposition. The chief information officer, the CIO of the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, was put on the stand in an evidentiary hearing, a preliminary evidentiary hearing, again, related to emergency relief, temporary relief being sought, in this case that has been brought challenging DOJ's access to this sensitive information. And the CIO of DOJ admitted on the stand yesterday that DOJ has not been complying with the requirements of federal law under the Privacy Act. I want everyone listening to sit with that for a moment. The chief information officer, so the guy handpicked by our billionaire overlord Elon Musk to access all of these information systems, admitted in federal court under oath yesterday that DOJ employees have not been complying with the Privacy Act. Now, there are other pieces of litigation that are going on in other courts. I think there's one in Maryland. I think there may be another one in a Virginia court. All of these have to deal with this information access for different departments and in different ways and shapes and forms. Courts have intervened and provided varying levels of relief, some requiring retraining, limitation of the access of various DOJ employees to like the absolute essentials. But this admission in federal court yesterday is remarkable. It is the thing that should tick all of us off, regardless of party, regardless of whom we may have voted for, because our most sensitive data is not being protected by the people who are sworn to protect it. Jim, I just wanted to get your reaction to that bit of sworn testimony yesterday.
Privacy Act is a bedrock principle. And in many ways, many applications, Maggie, as we both know, it applies across the board. And basically, it does what it says. It says what it does, which is when it comes to this kind of information, as you just said, tax information, Social Security information. And oh, by the way, when the IRS is created, when the Social Security Administration is created, what does the Congress also do? By the way, all that's got to be private, right? You can't private. Get at it, right? Right. And so that, too, right?
And I'm going to look at Jacob. Do we have the Elizabeth Warren sound with the guy that was okay? Let me just get this quick question in. Dale from Wausau, say hi to Jim. What you got for us this afternoon?
Hey, Dale.
Yeah, thank you for taking the call. Three quarters of a million Venezuelan people being deported and maybe murdered by the country they are deported to, contrary to how the emergency docket was used in the past, especially when the case involved the possibility of the death sentence for the accused. And the courts protecting the person accused from prematurely being put to death before the deliberations in the case being finally completed and the case being adjudicated and the court finding the accused to be guilty or not and the penalty decided if found guilty. In essence, probably a percentage of these Venezuelan people who will be put to death because of the Supreme Court putting a stay on a premature deportation of these Venezuelan people. And if that's the case, if a percentage of them are put to death, there will be blood on the hands of the Supreme Court. Thank you.
The analogy is a good one, right? Right. And we talked before, these principles they can't be perfectly consistent across the board. Not every single, you got variations, but Dale just underscores one of them, which is, again, if you're going to approach this in this cavalier way with dramatic results, you got to be consistent. And it's human beings, it's humanity at stake.
Folks, that is former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, James Santel. His fine program you can find Saturday mornings across the Civic Media Radio Network from 9 to 11 called Amicus, a Law Review. My name is Maggie Dawn. I mentioned some sound from Senator Elizabeth Warren questioning Donald Trump's nominee to lead the IRS. I'm going to save that nugget. We're going to have time later in the show. Also, a bombshell dropping today. Senator Joni Ernst, oops, the quiet part. She said it out loud in a hearing. You're not going to believe it. It's the cruelty embraced with a bear hug by a Republican senator. We're going to have that sound for you as well. Do not go anywhere. We've got all that and so much more coming up next. I've got Journal Sentinel reporter Eva Wen joining me on the other side. Did you know that DHHS just made some stuff up about somebody to deport them? Anybody surprised? Yeah, that's what due process is for. We discuss with reporter Wen from the Journal Sentinel. When we come back, we got that sound queued up for you. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great weekend, Jim.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Consumer prices rose just 2.1% in April, says the Commerce Department, down from March, excluding food and energy. Prices rose 2.5%. Announcing plans for a hearing next month into former President Joe Biden's cognitive abilities in office, Republican Senators Eric Schmidt and John Cornyn claiming they want to investigate who was running the country during what they call Biden's decline, which they claim was covered up by the news media. The current president, the White House.
Well, they're very close to an agreement on Gaza, and we'll let you know about it during the day or maybe tomorrow.
Mr. Trump also bidding adieu to his government efficiency chief, Elon Musk, clad in black with a black cap. The president saying while Musk is leaving that post, some of his assistants will stay. The continued uncertainty of the U.S.-China tariff war leads to a mixed close on Wall Street for the major indexes. The Dow added 54 points. This is ABC News.